We're switching things up this week, featuring some of our favorite conversations we've had this year on BuzzFeed Daily. Today, we're all about streaming shows. First up is a delightful chat with the intimacy coordinator for Netflix's Bridgerton. And then we get to hear from the creator and executive producer of Shrill on Hulu.
It's June 2nd, 2021. Hey friends, I'm Casey Rackham.
And I'm Shiloh Watson. Welcome to BuzzFeed Daily.
I think it's safe to say that one of the biggest TV events of 2021 has undoubtedly been Netflix's smash hit series, Bridgerton. I think it's also safe to say the primary reason for that is all of the sex. Back in January, former BuzzFeed Daily host Zach Stafford and I got a chance to talk with the series intimacy coordinator, Lizzie Talbot.
Hi, Lizzie. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Oh, of course. We're so excited. So we know your most recent project was Bridgerton, and we have so many questions about that. We will get to them all. But first, how did you become an intimacy coordinator? How did that even start?
Yeah, so I trained as a fight director for quite a few years. And it was really interesting seeing the contrast between scenes of violence and then scenes of intimacy. And when they came together in scenes of domestic violence, it was really interesting because we never had any issues with the violence because there are so many safety protocols and techniques that we would use to make that safe and believable. And yet when it came to the intimacy, like that's when sort of everyone started to struggle. Like directors would mime things because they didn't want to talk about it. And people were resting on the good graces of their scene partners, which we know isn't like always the safest thing to do. So I just started researching it. And in 2016, I opened my own company and kind of gone from there.
Wow, that's amazing. So was this a field that even existed before you began working on it? How long has it been around for?
Not very long. Some people have done like individual research on this, but it hasn't come together as a role until sort of like 2017, 2018.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's really interesting. A lot of people think that it's a product of the very public Me Too movement of 2017, but actually like lots of people were working on this beforehand. We just didn't get any traction. Yeah, I ran a workshop in 2016 and got one person. So, yeah, so that'll tell you like how much this has escalated in the last couple of years.
And why do you think it is escalating? Because I do know that every time we have any actor on the show now, they always bring up an intimacy coordinator, and this was never happening years ago.
I think studios sort of, they really took on what was happening with the Me Too movement. And I know it's not perfect. We've still got a long way to go, but they started to listen. And they started to listen to actors who had said, you know, for years that they felt unsafe or have just started to be able to voice those concerns. And those concerns were then taken seriously. And, you know, they were looking for a solution to that. And it was really great because this was something that we had already been working on.
And so take us back to like pre-2016, you're on set. What were those conversations like that you saw happening around these intimate scenes? Were they as awkward as I'd imagined them to be between the actors and the director?
I mean, I think intimacy scenes have always sort of had an element of awkwardness to them. And I think part of it is because there wasn't a lot of work done to separate personal and professional. And I think that a lot of that comes from actor training, you know, where actors were being told for years to, you know, be as open as possible, be as available as possible, be as vulnerable as possible. You should have no boundaries. You should be able to do anything and everything. And of course, as an actor, you know that if you don't do that, someone else who wants the part right behind you is going to. So there's a huge amount of pressure to do whatever people are asking you to do without much thought of what's happening inside your own body, what's happening with your emotions, and what's happening with your mental health.
Yeah. And you know, so much of what I imagine is going through an actor's head is that like, I'm supposed to be like giving myself up to a scene. I'm an artist. I'm supposed to do whatever I want. And they don't think they can have boundaries in that space. But what you're saying is that no, you should have boundaries. So what have you been hearing from actors now that they have people like you advocating for them? Are they feeling like their scenes are maybe even better because they have boundaries?
Yeah. And I think we're also, you know, at heart, we're also choreographers. That's what our role is. We're there to help choreograph sex scenes. And I think that there's been sort of like a misperception here about the fact that we like lots of us experience intimacy in our personal lives means that we can recreate that for an audience. But that's two very different things. And I think, you know, experiencing it in your personal life versus storytelling it for an audience, like it's just so different. And I think, you know, one of the things that we are here to do is to create choreography so that we are telling that story as dynamically and accurately as possible.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're grilling Lizzie on the filming of those notorious Bridgerton sex scenes.
Welcome back. We're talking with Lizzie Talbot, the intimacy coordinator on the set of Bridgerton. All right, so Lizzie, describe what went into filming Bridgerton. How much prep work was for these scenes, like a single scene? How much time did you put into planning them?
A lot. Full credit to Shondaland. They gave us that, which is amazing. We had weeks before filming where we would break down every single scene into separate choreographed moments, and really did a lot of table work around this. And so it was great to actually have that time. So we weren't just turning up on set and going, well, I don't know, we'll see what happens. You know, no, we knew exactly what was happening at like all the time, which was so great.
How did those creative meetings work? Like how, and not to be crass, I guess, it's like, okay, we have it, they're going to have sex. So who's like planning the type of sex? How is that even negotiated?
So that is worked out between like the director, myself, and the actors. Like we're all having that conversation. It's really important to understand what the director's creative vision is, because that's really what my role is there to serve as well. You know, I want to be able to give the director what they want in the safest possible way. And so like, that's what really my role becomes, is like a choreographer, a collaborator, and also like down to the, like the less interesting and less exciting paperwork side of this. You know, we've got to work together to make sure that we have got the nudity riders signed in advance to make sure that everyone's safe and that we know what we're doing on the day.
Mm-hmm. And I know Phoebe, the main actress in the work, she said that the first scene she shot for Bridgerton was actually a steamy sex scene, her first day on set. So talk to us about
the library scene. The library scene.
That was the first day. So how did you prepare for that, especially that being your first day at work? Because my first day of this job with Casey was not something like the library scene. Let me tell you that.
So I developed like a signaling system with Phoebe and Reggae that I knew that they were good to go. And so when we had that first scene, we tapped in, we did that signaling system. I knew that they were absolute pros at that point, and they knew that they were what they were going to do. The fun thing about that scene was not only was it the first one, but it was also done at the Reform Club in London, which was a gentleman's club for years and has only let women in since 1981. So it felt super cheeky to be doing like a scene of female sexual pleasure in a gentleman's club. And I was like, at that point, oh, I see you, Shonda.
the power yeah, of that scene.
I see where this cheekiness is going for the next 9 months. So that really set the tone, which was fun.
Wow, that's amazing. So, okay, we have to talk about the 3-minute sex montage from Bridgerton. It's one of the biggest talking points around the series. Was this one of the most ambitious undertakings for you as an intimacy coordinator? Because honestly, it seems just as ambitious choreography-wise as a fight scene in a Marvel movie.
Yeah, it was a lot. You know, we were up ladders, we were outside, we were inside, we were in the rain, we were in beds, we were in the Temple of the Four Winds. We were everywhere. We were by lake. Yeah, it was a bit of an intimacy circus. When I read the script, I was sort of reading it down. I was like, okay, so there's an intimacy scene there. Oh, and there. Oh, and there as well. Oh, and it's still going. And I remember reading the script going, wow, we are going to be busy. And that's not what you expect from a Regency show. When I first was emailed about this show, I was expecting something akin to like Pride and Prejudice, Sense and Sensibility. You know, there might be, you know, like a momentary passionate kiss, you know, potentially something that insinuated intimacy. Mm-hmm. But in no way did I think that we would be doing oral sex up a ladder in the middle of the
I mean, there should be the Olympics of what you coordinated there, because baby, let me tell you, I was exhausted. I had to get some water. I was just thinking the whole time, like, how the hell did they even think of all of this? Like, I have never looked at a library ladder and thought, ooh, yes, oral sex. That's where that's happening.
No, Chris Van Dusen, he's a genius.
There we go. Well, you bring up Jane Austen. And whenever I hear the name Jane Austen, I think of the one and only Keira Knightley. And she recently came forward and said she won't shoot any more sex scenes with any male directors, which I thought was so fascinating. So what are your thoughts about this? Like, do you think this is a direction maybe in the right way? Or how do you think how these actors are handling these situations now?
I think it certainly changed with the introduction of intimacy coordinators. Because, for example, Phoebe does a very complex and difficult scene where she's doing a solo scene of Daphne's first masturbation experience. And she actually had a male director for that scene. But one of the really great things was that I really believe that he understood like what the sensitivities around that scene were. And, you know, I collaborated with Phoebe, you know, in detail, in depth, for that scene to make sure that she felt ownership of it. And I think that's a really important experience for an actor.
And, you know, I have never been in the situation that Phoebe was in, but I think like as a woman, it would just, I'd have such a relief to know that like you were there, another woman was there in between me and a male director to just be like, we're in this together. I've got you. So I do. I think I would need that.
Yeah. And, you know, I spent a lot of time with Phoebe by that point. You know, we'd done, I think, yeah, that was episode 3. We actually shot all of Castle Howard in the first month or two. So that's the entire Taylor Swift montage was done and completed by like the end of August, maybe.
Okay, and well, that explains why they had such great chemistry the entire show, because they set it off with, you know, having literal chemistry.
Right. And so by the time that we got to that particular scene, you know, we knew each other pretty well at that point. She knew that she could come to me with anything that she needed. And, you know, we worked together. But it was incredibly brave of Phoebe to take that scene on, because you're not working with anyone else. You know, with other intimacy scenes, you've got a partner to sort of like bounce ideas off, to collaborate with, to create choreography with. But on that scene, you know, you're on your own. And, you know, there's no one else in bed with you. So it was an incredibly brave and very vulnerable thing that Phoebe took on. So I have so much respect for her.
I mean, I have so much respect for her. I'm upping my cardio these days to be at her level, to be honest. Anyway, you know, before this, I told you, Lizzie, that I called my best friend and said that you were coming on, and she was super, super excited. And, you know, the reason why I did that is because so many people are loving these sex scenes so, so, so much. So what's work like for you now? Are you getting people banging down your door asking you to coordinate their movies these days in TV shows?
It's certainly picked up. I think because of COVID, there's so many more sort of like hurdles to jump at this time. I've been really interested to see if we hadn't have had lockdown, what it would look like. I know that a lot of people are delaying intimacy scenes at the moment till much further on down the line. And I think the interesting thing is that I don't really believe that any of the cast or crew knew how massive it was going to be. One of the really interesting things is we knew that we had a really solid Brazilian fan base, which was really cool. They supported us throughout the whole like filming period. They were always sending really encouraging messages. So we knew that we had like a very specific fan base in Brazil who were just loving so hard on the cast, which is really lovely to see. But honestly, I think today the stats came out that, you know, it's been seen by 82 million households. And you know, when we were filming, I don't believe any of us had any idea that that would be the case.
Okay, Lizzie, this seems like a no-brainer question, but will you be back for Bridgerton season 2? Because I have to assume a bunch more sex is happening.
Have you read the book?
I haven't read the book, but one of my colleagues has, and yes, there's more sex.
There certainly is. There certainly is.
Can you give us any insight into that? Is there some sort of sex scene that you're looking forward to choreographing?
Thing is that, you know, like, I know that they take the books and the TV shows in different directions, because not everything that was in the book was in the TV series, and not the TV series is in the book. So that's always really exciting, because you don't know which pieces that they've taken and which storylines are going to be completely new. So I'm really, really looking forward to what happens there.
All right. Well, you know, Lizzie, before we go, first of all, I have to say thank you so much. This has really made my week. And also, I want to advocate that if you were in the writer's room at all for season two, that the Duke of Hastings should marry me and that I should be coming onto Bridgerton season two. So that's it. That's all I have to say. Thank you so much.
No problem. I'm just going to say, I think there's a cue. I think there's a line.
I bet there, yeah.
If my Instagram messages are anything to go by.
Oh, my God.
It's mostly turned into like a proxy proposal account for reggae at this point.
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, that man, literally, I had to get water. So anyway, well, Lizzie, thank you so, so much. Thank you for your work. Thank you for sharing space with us. And thank you for giving us Bridgerton.
Thank you so much for having me.
Guys, we have since learned that the Duke of Hastings, Reggae Jean Page, will not be back for season two. It's very heartbreaking, but we're hopeful. But we're hopeful that Lizzie will at least be back to make sure that there is still some good sex in Bridgerton.
You know, I'm sure she'll be there for us. I'm sure. Also, the other season one lead, Phoebe Denever, is now dating Pete Davidson, which is kind of wild, but they seem happy. So good for them.
Good for them. Next, we're talking about another fantastic series, Shrill. The series returned to Hulu for its final season last month. The show developed a massive following among both fans and critics because it brought us something we haven't seen before, a fat positive heroine portrayed by the amazing Adi Bryant. We got a chance to chat with series creator and executive producer Lindy West ahead of its release. Hi, Lindy. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So first, we just want to say congratulations on the season. We're big fans and so excited for it to come back. But it's also bittersweet because it's the final season. You know, the show is obviously very personal for you. It's based on your memoir. So what's the process of saying goodbye to it been like?
Oh, great question. I mean, it's definitely bittersweet. We never wanted this to be like a 13 season show or something. We always envisioned it as kind of a small, compact little story. But I think ideally we would have loved to do 4 seasons. So it ended slightly prematurely. We did have some other places we wanted to take the character, but also like getting to do 3 seasons is so amazing and such a gift. So I don't know. I feel like very happy with what we made, and getting to make it at all is so rare, you know? And obviously I'm going to really miss all these characters, and I'm going to miss the whole team because everyone is so special. But I also feel, you know, I realized this, you know, the other day that Shrill the book came out 5 years ago next week. And now this week, 5 years later, the show is closing. Yeah. And it feels very kind of clean and beautiful in this way. And it's making me feel very excited about the future. Like, I have this pause all of a sudden, and I don't quite know what I'm going to do next. And I have a bunch of options, and I get to really look around and think about what I really actually want to do. And that's really exciting. So I'm obviously sad that the show's over, but I'm like very energized and really excited about the future. And so grateful for the, you know, the show has opened up so many opportunities for me. So, you know, I got no complaints.
So after 3 seasons, do you still feel like Annie's sort of an extension of you, or do you think that she's sort of taken on a life of her own?
I mean, she's definitely taken on a life of her own in a way that I love so much. It's been so fun to sort of set her free and watch her grow. But I mean, there's certainly, yeah, I'm still really sentimentally attached to her, and she grew from me. You know, she started right. from...
She's
from
your
a little
baby.
Piece of me.
Your baby. Also your age.
She's my adult baby. You know, it just happens kind of inevitably when you have a whole team of writers and you have a whole production team and you have especially an actor, and Adi is not just an actor, but she's in the room writing the show and really driving the narrative. And so, of course, Annie becomes so much 80 too. And it's like, it's been really exciting, but there are some parts of her life that I still feel very close to. And it's, yeah, I don't know. It's kind of a perfect combination of like distance and closeness. Like I just feel very proud of her.
Mm. Okay. So you did touch on this, but you know, it's been reported. You guys didn't know that this would be the last season when you started working on it. So are you happy with the way the show ends? You know, for all of us who love Annie and Fran so much, will we be happy?
I hope so. I mean, you know, it ends, it doesn't end with a big, you know, bow on it. It's like, because we didn't know when we were writing it or shooting it. We found out during editing, so we were able to kind of tweak the editing a little bit, but this was intended to be a season finale, not a series finale. But I actually, I do like where it lands, because it lands in this very naturalistic place where it's like, as though we sort of like dropped into these people's lives and now we're just winking back out, which feels true to the show. And there is a little, there's not closure, but there is sort of, you do feel, you know, without spoiling anything, it lands in a place of like Annie and Fran's friendship, you know, really being the foundation for both of their lives. And I think that that is where we started too. And it feels right. And I had this realization that there's something nice to me about not ending with like a wedding or whatever people usually do, because it makes me feel like all of these characters are just still living. You know what I mean? Like it feels like the story continues even if we're not seeing it, which is just me being sentimental, but it's nice. I like to think that like Ruthie and Maureen are still just hanging around the office, and you know what I mean? Like I want to believe that everything goes on, you know? It's sweet.
All right. Well, we're going to be talking even more about this right after the break. Welcome back. We're talking with Lindy West about the final season of Shrill. Now, you told the Seattle Times that the theme of the final season is intimacy, which is ironic given that this is something a lot of us, you know, might have been lacking in our lives this last year. So what was the process like to write and film this season?
It was definitely very complicated because of COVID. Like everyone's career became complicated. In certain ways, like there were some advantages. Like I was shocked by how productive and vibrant the writer's room felt, even doing it over Zoom. Such a wonderful touchstone to be able to like come together and do this creative thing every day and, you know, feel kind of normal. And you could feel the relief in everyone just getting to see each other's faces every day. Like it was so nice. And it absolutely like got me through spring/summer 2020. I mean, it was like, and when you're not sitting around in a room, like goofing off and eating snacks, you're like, turns out twice as productive. Like
shocking.
It was amazing how fast we were just like cranking out scripts. The ideas were like popping off. It was so good. I mean, to the point where we had multiple conversations that were like, should no one ever do an in-person writer's room ever again? Because it was really, really like it flowed. It was easy. I don't know. And then shooting was very complicated. We had to have, you know, as few people on set as possible. So I didn't go to Portland at all for the shoot. And in seasons 1 and 2, I was there every day. But this was like, we had just one designated producer on set every day. And so it was like, that's the set person and they're doing the COVID protocols. And it was like, you know, it was challenging in a lot of ways. We had to change certain storylines, like the parents, Annie's parents only appear on FaceTime because, you know, we didn't want to make Daniel and Julia travel. Adie said this the other day, it really did create this kind of more intimate feeling to the season because most of the scenes are just one or two people in a room because you can't have these big set pieces. It's a lot of, you know, relationship talk and intimacy between friends and romantic intimacy. And it kind of shrunk the world down in this way that actually I think turned out really nice.
Oh, I love that. So, you know, When the show first started out, it was really branded as being about Annie's life and experiences as a fat woman. But you've said that that's less of a focus this season. Was that just a creative choice where the story and the character took you? Or does it have anything to do with the fact that, you know, we as a society have made a slight progress on body positivity? Or is that just hilariously too optimistic?
I mean, yeah, it's probably too optimistic, but like, we've certainly made some progress, but it's more just that I think Adi and I both are tired of being just flattened into fat person, you know? And I think both of us are hungry to be more than that and to really put our personhood on screen and Annie's personhood in a much richer way. And we did do that in seasons 1 and 2. And there is body stuff in season 3, because obviously it's always a part of your life because it's imposed upon you all the time by the society around you. But it's not like when I'm alone, I'm like, well, here I am fat in my room. You know, it's like, I am a person. And so it was important to us, deeply important, to walk that line and make sure that we're like respecting and addressing the social challenges that fat people face and the reality of that, while also letting Annie blossom and be a full person. So we tried to do both, and I would say it's out of personal, personal experience and personal yearnings to make the kind of representation that we want as fat people.
You know, this is kind of off topic, but do you think the pandemic has changed how we feel about our bodies and how we judge them, possibly for the better? Or is it for the worse, a mixed bag, et cetera?
I mean, I'm sure it's going to be for the worse. For right now, it feels like for the better. But like, I am loving these Will Smith Instagram posts, but you know it's just going to be like one big lose your baby weight. But it's gonna, you know, there's just,
you know what, that already happened, and I got to, when it was like, this is the perfect time to lose all that weight while you're stuck at home, and right, I blocked them immediately.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's interesting because I think there are probably a lot of people who have never seen their bodies change in this way who are now experiencing that. But also, it's probably just going to be like massive windfall for the diet industry. Absolutely.
Because they need more money, depression. Everyone. They need more money.
They need it. They're struggling. Yeah. But I don't know. I mean, hopefully, I believe in progress, and I believe that we gradually move forward. And so hopefully there's a little more empathy for the fact that sometimes it's hard to have a body and to like absolutely control what your body does, because, you know, and also I hope people feel a little bit more kinder to their bodies. You know what I mean? I think because all of our bodies like got us through this. I feel a lot of gratitude toward my body, and my body's thriving in COVID. Like, oh my God, pre-COVID, I was just like on a plane every day. I was always like, and now I just like, there's nothing to do but go for a walk. So I don't know. My back is feeling great. I'm sleeping. Like,
I'm jealous, honestly.
I mean, I'm sure it won't last, but.
So, you know, this was your first foray into TV, which I think we can all agree was super successful. And next, I'm hearing that you're writing something for Shonda Rhimes. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, well, it's an anthology show. So my husband and I wrote one episode together. It's called Notes on Love, and it's an anthology show about love and relationships. Very broad, and I love working with them. They're so great. And they just gave us total freedom. They were like, any genre you want, any like tone, you can have any, just as long as it's about love and relationships in some way. So we wrote like a very strange, I'm probably not allowed to talk about it because I don't even know how, like where we are in the process, but the script is done and I'm obsessed with it and I think it's really good. And it was, I think we're going to make it. I don't know. I think that Shonda just gets to do whatever she wants. So
yeah, I'm pretty positive. Yeah. I'm pretty positive. That's how it works. How it goes.
Yeah. But it's, I mean, honestly, like, I don't know. This isn't like the Shonda Rhimes Yelp, but like, 10 10 out of 10 recommend working with Shonda Land if you can. They're so incredible to work with and like so supportive and fun. And yeah, really, really great creative experience.
That's amazing. So, and so exciting.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Well, Lindy, thank you so much for joining us today.
So great to meet you both. Thank you so much.
We can't wait to see what Lindy brings us next. But guys, there are now rumors AD Bryant may be leaving SNL. And if that happens on top of losing Shrill, it's just going to be a lot to handle, Shyla.
I'm sad. All right, that's it for today. Come back and join us tomorrow when we'll have two more awesome convos to revisit.
And remember, Reggae Jean Page might be gone from the Bridgerton set, but hopefully Lizzie Talbot remains.
Be sure to subscribe to BuzzFeed Daily on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you go for your sound stories.
And please take the time to leave us a rating and a review. It helps us figure out what you like about the show versus what you love about the show. And remember to come back for more of what you love about BuzzFeed, coming to you daily.